Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. Well, next month is the primary election, and there are some hotly contested races around the Tampa Bay area. One of those races is the Democratic primary race for Congressional District 15. That district is currently represented by first-term Republican Ross Spano. The congressional district includes eastern Hillsborough County, Brandon and Plant City, and parts of Polk County, including Lakeland and Bartow, and parts of Lake County. It leans Republican. Residents voted for both Rick Scott and Ron DeSantis by about 7 points in 2018 and for Donald Trump by about 10 points in 2016, according to MCI Maps. Over the next several days, we'll talk with the candidates in the Democratic primary for District 15. And our guest today is one of those candidates, Adam Hattersley. He's currently a member of the Florida House of Representatives representing the 59th District. Hattersley is an engineer and a small business owner, and he earned a Bronze Star for his service in the U.S. Navy during the Iraq War, and he joins us on the phone. Adam Hattersley, welcome to WMNF. Good to have you here.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on, Rob.
Thanks for coming on. So, Adam, let me start with a simple question. Why do you want the job?
Well, really, my life has been all about service, you know. In the military, you learn to focus on your mission. And in my life, as I said, my mission has been to serve. I signed up to serve in the United States Navy right out of university. I volunteered to serve with an Army unit in combat in Iraq during the height of the war from 2006 to 2007. I'm even a member of the draft board, you know, the Selective Service Board, and I have been for several years. And then, you know, in 2018, you know, I still wasn't even registered with a political party, but my people from the community started calling me and asking if I would serve again by running for the Florida House of Representatives. You know, somebody was running in the area that really didn't reflect our community's values, and people called and asked, and I answered that call to serve again. And you know, when I was up in Tallahassee, you know, people from the community started calling one more time, calling and asking if I would serve. You know, I'm the only Democrat to win anywhere in this area on a state level or higher in about 20 years, you know, and I've been fighting for health care and for better wages in Tallahassee, for teachers, for public education, you know, for a lot of common sense things. I was working across the aisle, and people called and asked if I would serve again by running for Congress, and so I have for good or ill, you know, for the rest of my adult life, I've answered that call to serve. To bring some better representation back to the Florida 15th.
President Trump won that district by 10 points. What makes you think that a Democrat can win?
That's actually a really good question. And you can get some answers by looking at the 2018 election. This district is really very similar to about a half a dozen other districts that Trump won, that young veterans who've also had public service were able to flip, some by as much as, I want to say, 16 points in upstate New York. But veterans like Jared Golden in Maine, like Jason Crow in Colorado, like Elaine Loria in Virginia, who's another Navy nuke, just like me. These districts, you know, there's a lot of suburbs or exurbs, as they're called, and the Florida 15th is almost exactly along that model of a district that's ready to flip from red to blue as long as there's the right candidate, someone you know, who has service in their background and is a veteran, because we were able to flip several of those districts in 2018, so I think we have a great opportunity to flip a seat just like that here in 2020.
Our guest today is Adam Hattersley. He's going to be on the ballot next month in the August primary. He's one of three Democrats running for the nomination for District 15, the congressional seat. That includes parts of Hillsborough County and Polk County and parts of Lake County. So, Adam, let's talk about health care for a moment. We have the Affordable Care Act. We have Obamacare. Do you like it? And would you change it? Would you reform it? And what do you do for those 3 million Floridians who do not yet have health insurance?
Well, I mean, let me start off by saying that if it were up to my opponent, you know, to Ross Spano, we would already have repealed the Affordable Care Act altogether, making it just that much harder for self-employed people and underserved people to get insurance, and taking away protections from people with pre-existing conditions. You know, we have to fix the ACA and extend its benefits to be able to cover those 3 million extra Floridians, you know, by introducing a public option expanding Medicaid, having a, you know, a sliding scale on that public option, so the least fortunate of us really don't pay anything, and the more fortunate of us are on that sliding scale and are able to pay in. It is a way that we can absolutely fix that. You know, there's a, just like I was talking about those veterans who are able to flip from districts in 2018, they're in Washington for the right reasons. They're there to put their country and their constituents before political party and personal gain. And that's what I'm trying to go and join. I'm ready to put our community and our country before the party or myself to do the right thing. And if we can get the politics and the bureaucracy out of the ACA, that'll be a great start to fixing it down the road. You know, additionally, there's some other quick things that we can do. You know, the VA is allowed to negotiate directly with large pharmaceutical companies to lower drug prices for veterans. Ross Spano voted against expanding that to letting Medicare do that for all Americans. And I don't understand why he would want to do that. So that's something else we can do right away, is allow the, you know, Medicare and Medicaid to negotiate with large pharmaceutical companies on our behalf to lower drug prices for everybody.
There are some Democrats that think that we should have a Canadian-style system. Bernie Sanders, not being a Democrat, but being one of those in Congress that thinks that we should have a single-payer system. What do you think of the Canadian system of single-payer health care?
You know, I think it's a great system. There's a lot of countries that have similar systems. But one thing about Americans, we love choice. And I don't want to take away somebody's private health insurance if they feel that's the best way to go. However, you know, that being said, if we are able to fix the ACA and with that public option, we can reduce costs, you know, through that public option, which would then force private insurance to reduce their costs, helping everybody. And as long as we're able to get the bureaucracy out of that, people will just naturally, you know, by choice, because for Americans, we love choice, we'll start choosing those public options more frequently, and it'll be a good way to eventually get us to that place where we do have universal healthcare coverage. You know, we have to get there eventually. You know, I don't think we can flip a magical switch and have it happen tomorrow. You know, it's great to swing to hit a grand slam on every pitch, but right now the bases aren't even loaded. You know, we have to take some steps to prepare and be ready when we get to that place. So it's going to be a process, but I do think we can eventually get to a universal coverage.
The federal minimum wage right now is $7.25 an hour. The minimum wage has continually lost buying power since 1968. What should Congress do about the minimum wage? What is the right wage? If you agree with the minimum wage, what's the right minimum wage to have in the country?
Well, I'm an engineer by degree, and I've done the math. You know, at $15 an hour, that's the bare minimum you need to be able to support yourself, let alone a family. You know, we shouldn't have such a thing as working poor in America. You know, these folks, they're not looking for a handout. They work just as hard as everybody else, and they want to be able to support their families. You know, and when workers make more money, do you know what they do with it? They spend it, and that money goes right back into the economy. You know, our minimum wage, it hasn't gone up in about 10 years. And just like you said, the buying power has gone down because everything else has gotten more expensive over the past 10 years. So eventually we have to, I think we need to get to a $15 an hour minimum wage. We have to have a path to get there, you know, in incremental steps so we don't, you know, snuff out business and damage the economy. But as long as we do it in a measured and predictable way, when businesses know what the plan is, I think we can absolutely achieve a $15 an hour minimum wage in the next several years.
Our guest today is running for Congress. He's Adam Hattersley. He's a Democrat. He's going to be one of three Democrats on the ballot at the end of August when we have our primary election. And we're going to invite the other candidates on this week, too, to talk about the election. So, Adam, what do you think of the Black Lives Matter movement?
You know, I've been to some of the protests, and let me say it again like I have before. Black lives matter. You know, there's a great story, and you know, people have talked about it. You know, there's a flock of 100 sheep, and one went wandering off, and Jesus went to find that one sheep, and people asked, you know, why are you doing that? It's because that one needs the attention, and right now we need to put the attention on the areas that need the attention. And by saying, you know, Black Lives Matter, it doesn't mean that one life means more than another or less than another. No, it means that that their lives just matter. And we have to be willing to have that difficult conversation and confront the racial tensions that we've come a long way in the United States, but we still have a long way to go in confronting those tensions and be able to figure out a way to work through them and make sure we do treat everybody fairly. Because, for freedom, it's not pick and choose who gets it. It's freedom needs to be for everybody, or we're not free, to paraphrase.
All right. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, just that. I think it's a conversation that needs to be had. Politicians, we need to be able to listen to what our constituents are saying to be able to have this conversation to make the change that's needed for everybody.
So the Black Lives Movement has centered around police brutality. What could Congress do to move the country towards equality for all, as you just mentioned, and also reducing the violence between police and civilians, especially black civilians?
Well, Congress luckily has already taken some steps, with the new Policing Act, to start reforming some of the practices across the country. Like I said, we have to be willing to face any potential implicit racial bias, and we can't confront that until we face it and understand that it's a real thing. The overwhelming majority of protests have been peaceful. There's over 1,000 folks in Tampa the past couple weeks, and hundreds in Lakeland, and I know because I was there, and we have to listen to people when they're exercising their right to peaceful protest. There's a reason that they're protesting, but we have to absolutely right size the police force. A bit of demilitarization of the police force. Have some more accountability and get that trust back between the community and the local police force. Having the members of the police look like and come from the communities they're policing would go a long way to earning some of that trust back.
You mentioned the militarization of the police. The Pentagon has a 1033 program since 1997, since the end of the Clinton administration. It's sent $7 billion in surplus military equipment. Now, that's everything from office supplies to armored vehicles to grenade launchers to local police departments and law enforcement agencies. What do you think about that program? Just your view on it. And does it say that the Pentagon has too much money?
Well, that was 23 years ago. Not many things stay static for 23 years. So we definitely need to revisit that policy. It's also been, I think, close to 30 years. I've spoken with some experts at Stanford University since we've taken a hard look at where our military budget needs to be. I'm for right-sizing the budget. When I was in Iraq, sometimes we would get equipment that would show up. We didn't ask for it. We didn't need it. Nobody that we knew of used it. We didn't have a use for it. Just because they had spent money on it, so they felt like we should give it to everybody. But then there are other items that we would need, like electronic countermeasures to help protect us from remote-operated improvised explosive devices that were difficult to get and we had a fight to get because nobody in Washington thought it was a priority. We need to listen to our on-site commanders and right-size the military budget. But militarizing the police, to get back to your original question, some of those armored vehicles are just as up-armored as the Humvee that I drove when I was in Iraq on combat missions. That's not what we need in our streets. It's not going to breed trust between the community and the police. That's more for intimidation and force, and doing the right things, like body cams, for example, would much more promote accountability and trust amongst the police force within the community.
Our guest is State Representative Adam Hattersley. He's running for Congress. He's going to be on the ballot at the end of August, and he's one of three Democrats in the race. Ultimately, whoever wins that race at the end of August will likely go up against Republican Ross Spano, who is the first-term member of Congress from District 15, which includes parts of eastern Hillsborough County and Plant City and Polk County, Lakeland. And I should say that Representative Spano also has a primary, too. So, Adam, talk about COVID-19 and how well do you think President Trump has responded to the outbreak? And if you were in Congress, what could you do to improve the federal government's response?
That's a great question. And, you know, I know you asked earlier about looking at other countries and the way they do things. And, you know, if other countries are successful at something, that doesn't mean that we should not look at that policy. You know, countries like New Zealand and Italy, South Korea, who saw early spikes of coronavirus, were able to take aggressive early steps to shut down and have these protective policies in place. Yes, economically, it took a short-term hit, but in the long run, those countries are already reopening and restarting their economies. Our response has been, it's been politicized. The president has politicized this crisis. You know, there's no reason that medical experts should be looked at as political. Wearing a mask should not be political. This is about a civic responsibility, amongst our citizens, not about politics. But unfortunately, it's turned political. And by taking only half measures, we've extended this crisis here in the United States. You know, here in Florida, we have over 200,000 confirmed cases of coronavirus. We've had over 3,500 deaths. That so much of that could have been prevented by taking an early and an appropriate response, just like a lot of other countries did. Yeah, it would have hurt the economy a little bit at the beginning, but then we could have gotten through this crisis. Instead, these half measures, we prolong the crisis. And based on the rate of exposures in the past 2 weeks here in Florida, we are right back to where we started, and the economy is going to suffer more in the long run. We have to have smart, bold leadership that's ready to, that, well, should have been ready to take action. I don't know if you saw just today, in Hillsborough County alone, there are several hospitals that their ICUs, intensive care units, are full. The worst could potentially be on its way because of poor leadership and a halfway measure. You know, I'd like to, as another quick parable, you know, when I was in Iraq, when we got shot at, yeah, it was a problem, and we didn't like it. But we faced the problem, or else, you know, so we could solve it, or else the problem was going to solve us. And right now, it looks like the administration is just ignoring COVID. It looks like they've given up because they don't like the problem, and that's not going to help anybody.
Adam, do you support any further regulations on the sales of guns or ammunition?
You know, I definitely support common sense gun, you know, firearm regulations. I'm a Moms Demand Action Gun Sense candidate. I was the only ground combat veteran in the Florida legislature. And we're not even doing the bare minimum right now. You know, I was arguing for universal violent history checks. Before, you know, closing the gun show loophole to make sure that people who have these violent histories are not getting firearms. Like, just the absolute bare minimum. You know, I was talking about trying to swing for a grand slam when the bases aren't even loaded, and that's where we are right now. You know, we have to hit a single before we can knock in a run. And something like doing that bare minimum that over 90% of Floridians agree with, of having universal violent history checks before purchase of a firearm, that's absolutely something we need to do right now.
The Social Security Administration says that among elderly Social Security beneficiaries, 21% of married couples, about 45% of unmarried singles, rely on Social Security for 90% or more of their income. And as we see defined benefit pensions disappear, as more and more people are working in the gig economy, Social Security is becoming the income source of last resort for more and more seniors. Some politicians have tried to privatize Social Security. They say that's the way to go. Some have called for increasing benefits. What's your approach to Social Security?
Well, right now, just like you said, Social Security is under attack. So the first priority has to be to defend it and defend that, you know, protect that income for our seniors. You know, their entire working lives, all of us, have been paying into Social Security specifically to have these benefits when they're older. You know, we have to for people who make a lot of money, you know, like millions of dollars, we need to lift the cap on the Social Security income tax. People who earn far, far more, they only pay Social Security on a certain portion of their income, and we need to lift that cap so that we're able to pay in and protect Social Security. I mean, it's already under strain as we have an aging population. So we have to, again, do the bare minimum and defend Social Security against those who are saying we should privatize it.
Well, our guest is Adam Hattersley, and over the next few days, we're going to be interviewing several candidates for congressional seat, Congressional District 15, that seat. And this week, we'll be talking with the Democrats, and our guest, Adam, is one of three Democrats in that race. He'll be on the ballot the end of August.
August 18th.
Thank you for that correction. It's about 7 weeks from now. Right now, if you work for a wage or a salary, as Warren Buffett has famously pointed out, you pay taxes at a higher rate than if you derive your income from investing in capital gains. Do billionaires and profitable corporations pay their fair share of taxes? And if they don't, what would you do as a member of Congress to make sure that they do?
Well, right now, they do not pay their fair share of taxes. If you look at the top corporations, not just in the country, but in Florida, through certain tax regulations, they pay almost no taxes. And some of the tax breaks that the Trump administration put into place for the wealthiest of Americans, I want to say something like 83 or 84% of those benefits went to the wealthiest Americans. And all that does is hurt the average American. And we need to make it more fair and equitable. If I'm paying, I'm an average middle class guy here, and the state house, our salary is about $28,000 a year. That's it. It's public record. And if I'm paying 15-20% on that, but our wealthiest corporations are paying no tax, how is that fair for anybody? For the guy who's making minimum wage, working wherever, doing an honorable day's work, who's providing for his family, if that person is paying more percentage of of taxes than the top 1%, that's a problem. These tax cuts for the uber wealthy have only benefited the uber wealthy and have hurt everybody else. And we have to be more equitable here in this country. If we're all going to be Americans and paying into, paying our taxes, they should definitely be more equitable.
Do you think President Trump is fit for office based on what his record has been so far?
Is this a yes or no? I would say no.
Okay. Well, what would be your biggest objection to the way he's handled his time in office?
Well, it's been 3.5 years, and there's really a lot to choose from. But let's pick something from the last 2 weeks. Like I mentioned, I served during the war in Iraq from 2006 to 2007. Not everybody came home. And when our commander-in-chief is implicitly condoning a foreign power putting bounties on our soldiers' heads, that is unforgivable. Just that alone is enough for me.
Congress has the power to declare war. And the U.S. has been involved in Afghanistan and Iraq for a long time. Have we been too quick to go to war? Are we overextended? And are we using our military in the correct way?
Well, Congress has not declared war in those theaters. That you're right, that power does belong with Congress. And, they've passed some extra emergency powers to give leeway to the executive branch to be a little bit more liberal with our use of force across the world. And the founders wrote that into the Constitution for a reason, and Congress needs to be, if I'm there or not, Congress must be consulted before declaring any type of military action. So I think we might be using too much of a broad stroke from the executive branch of involving us in some of these foreign some of these conflicts. Having again been there myself, we have to give Congress the chance to do what the Constitution tells it to do and give them back the power for military intervention.
You mentioned earlier that you serve on the draft board. We don't currently have a draft, but people are supposed to register when they turn 18. Do you support reviving the draft? And if so, why? If not, why not?
Well, I do not think we need a draft right now at all. We haven't had one, since Vietnam. The reason we still, the draft board still exists, it's part of that preparedness for the country that You know, if something happened, like a Pearl Harbor, if it happened, we need to be ready to act quickly. And by just maintaining the draft board, that's the way to do that. I do not think that we need a draft right now. Absolutely not. Do we need to be prepared? Absolutely. You know, just like the Boy Scouts always, you know, always be prepared. And if we let that lapse, that could be taking away some of that preparedness. And yeah, registering for the draft, it is, you know, part of turning 18. You know, it helps keep you eligible for some of those, you know, federal jobs and programs. But you know, it's part of that civic responsibility and feeling a part of the community and a part of the country. And saying, you know, if something like Pearl Harbor happened, if something like that happened, we are ready as a nation to face that together. So no, I do not think we need a draft right now. I don't think anything warrants it, but I do think having the selective service system still in place is vital to our overall preparedness.
Do you think China or Iran right now, as it currently stands, present a military threat to the U.S.?
Well, if you look at, again, as an engineer, if you look at the numbers, China has built and launched more naval ships than any other country in the world, like about every year, I think, for about the past decade and a half. Absolutely, they do pose a threat. You know, but first off, you know, any type of diplomatic outreach obviously needs to be the first, second, and third options. But we have to be prepared to defend ourselves and meet any threat internationally. Iran definitely does destabilize that area. You know, we have certain rules of engagement when we do engage in these areas. Again, like when I was in Iraq, the rules of engagement, you know, said we don't shoot first. And we didn't. You know, also, we don't cross borders into other countries where we're not allowed to operate. Other nations in that area don't necessarily follow those rules of engagement. So it does make it a little tricky and a bit of a threat. But ultimately, we are, you know, the last remaining superpower. We have to be prepared to protect American citizens all over the world and for the threats of the future.
We're talking with Adam Hattersley, who is running for the Democratic nomination for Congress for Congressional District 15. That includes parts of Hillsborough and Polk and Lake Counties, and this is 88.5 FM. Adam, the Green New Deal has been proposed in Washington. Do you support the Green New Deal or a variation of? What's your position on the Green New Deal?
You know, there's a lot of great things in there. I think the timeline is a bit aggressive. I definitely support Vice President Biden's plan to be carbon neutral by 2050. But ultimately, the thing is, I think this is actually a great contract. Ross Spano has said publicly that he is a proud and self-proclaimed climate change denier, which I find insane living here in Florida. We are already seeing the effects of climate change. Just like, you know, I mentioned before in a gunfight in Iraq, just because you don't like the problem, ignoring it, hoping it's going to go away is not helping anybody. We have to confront those problems. You know, I look at data. I'm an engineer. I look at the numbers. And I even believe the Pentagon scientists when they say that climate change is the top threat to our national security within the next 50 years. Not just that, but green jobs are going to be a major economic driver for God knows how long. And you know, as the United States, we've always led globally, and we're at risk of falling behind in this area. So, the Green New Deal does have a lot of good things. The timeline, I think, is a bit aggressive, but Vice President Biden's plan to be carbon neutral by 2050, I am definitely supportive of, and definitely do understand that climate change is real, that it's a threat to our way of life, and it needs to be faced. Just like any other problem, and I'm ready to go to Washington and help out. You know, just like my neighbor to the west in the congressional 14th, Congresswoman Kathy Castor, who's the chair of the Select Committee on Climate Change. I'm ready to go and work with them and help to make sure that we're ready to face this threat, not just as Floridians, but as a country.
Adam, I'm promising the candidates 30 minutes, so I'm down to my last question. I'll give you a chance to kind of wrap up, but in your district, I-4. Most days, especially weekdays, is one long traffic jam. What would you do if you went to Congress to try to improve the corridor between Tampa and Orlando?
Wow, that's a great question. And I mean, infrastructure is such a driver for the economy and improving jobs and creating jobs. But one thing, you know, we could have done 10 years ago is high-speed rail between Tampa and Orlando. That would take cars off of I-4 and help increase efficiency of travel along that corridor. And taking a look at that again and helping the infrastructure initiative that's underway right now to install high-speed rail along the I-4 corridor, it is a great thing that we can do pretty much right away to have a major impact, not just on improving travel times and safety on I-4. It's also one of the more dangerous highways in the country, but increasing economic opportunity in the area. So it's kind of a win-win.
Adam, if people want to get in touch with your campaign, find out more, what's the best way to do that?
There's a couple ways. Our website is HattersleyForCongress.com. That's HattersleyForCongress, and FORCongress.com. We're on all the social medias, HattersleyForFL, you know, FORFL, on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Our phone number is 813-213-4353. Or you can get us directly, adamhattersley@hattersleyforcongress.com.
Adam Hattersley, thank you very much. My mask is getting in my way here as I'm trying to speak. But Adam, thanks for coming on WMNF.
I appreciate it, Rob. Thanks for having me on. We're excited. Everybody, vote-by-mail ballots are going out in the next couple of weeks. Look for your ballots, and I hope we can earn your confidence and earn your vote here in the primary and then again in the general. We're ready to go.
Thank you, Adam. Great to talk to you.
I appreciate it. Thanks, Rob.
Thank you. Bye-bye. That's Adam Hattersley, who is running for Congress in District 15. And we're going to have another one of the candidates on the air. I think we'll be able to get him on tomorrow. Well, you're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. Thanks for listening. If you want to comment about anything you've heard here so far, you can email us here in the studio. The address is dj@wmnf.org. And my mask is getting in my way. I pulled it down to cover my chin, but these masks, as we're all kind of sick of this, I know, but we're trying to do the right thing, right? Let's take some phone calls. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. The U.S. is nearing 3 million coronavirus cases, and now some health experts are worried the spread may be out of control. Florida reported 6,000 new cases of coronavirus yesterday. We now have 206,000 cases here in Florida. Our positivity rate as of Sunday was about 15%. You heard Adam say there that there is a growing concern about a shortage of ICU beds. Florida's Agency for Healthcare Administration reported Sunday that 4 hospitals in Pinellas County had run out of ICU beds. The average age of the cases recorded on Sunday was, the median age, rather, was 38. Most of the cases, if you look by group, most of the cases occurred among people 25 to 34 years old, 21% of the cases recorded Sunday of COVID-19. And the age group with the highest death rate was the group of people 85 years or older. 36% of the deaths on Sunday were people over 85. Florida's public schools must open their campuses in August and operate 5 days a week, according to an executive order issued yesterday by the Education Commissioner Richard Corcoran. That requirement could be waived if local or state health departments deem such plans unsafe. As much as $273 million in federal coronavirus aid was awarded to more than 100 companies that are owned or operated by major donors to President Trump's election efforts. That's according to an Associated Press analysis of government data that was released yesterday. Many of the Trump-connected businesses were among the first to be approved for a loan in early April. And all told, Trump supporters who run these companies have collectively contributed at least $11 million since May of 2015 to committees that are supporting President Trump. China is accusing the U.S. of flexing its military muscles in the South China Sea by conducting joint exercises with 2 U.S. aircraft carrier groups in the waterway off the Chinese coast. The foreign ministry spokesperson says the exercises were performed totally out of ulterior motives. U.S. Navy said over the weekend that the USS Nimitz and USS Ronald Reagan, along with accompanying vessels and aircraft, are over there right now conducting military exercises in the South China Sea. And again, our phone number is 813-239-9663. Let's take some phone calls from listeners. Barbara Fling is our phone producer today, and let's go to this person says Elvis in St. Petersburg. I hope it's the real Elvis. Elvis, you're on. What would you like to say?
Yes, Rob. Is your guest along?
No. I'm giving them 30 minutes, and I'm trying to be fair and not take any questions while they're on the air, just so I can keep it to 30 minutes exactly. So, Elvis, what would you like to say?
Yeah, I just want to say, if you confess it on to him, can you name the countries in the Middle East that the Iran and China invaded? Because I can name seven different countries that the U.S. has invaded by military force.
Yeah, the U.S. does have a lot of overseas operations, and we don't tend to pay a lot of attention to it. That's why I brought it up in the interview. So what do you think about all the places that the U.S. is involved militarily, Elvis?
Well, if you look at what Hillary Clinton said, that when she was interviewed when it comes to Libya, we eventually come to get rid of the dictator there for no reason, because they wanted the oil, because Libya was one of the richest countries in the Middle East.
Yeah. All right, Elvis, thanks a lot. Thank you for the call.
All right, thank you, sir.
All right, let's go to a Daryl in Tampa. Daryl, thanks for calling. What's up?
Hey, Rob, how you doing?
Good.
I just wanted to make a statement about what the gentleman was saying and about the market. And a lot of people like to throw out the boogie name of Warren Buffett. But I just want to say this. There are millions and millions, and I believe millions of Americans who are in the market. They're not Warren Buffett. How do I know that? If you work for a company that has a 401k, you're in the market. If you have a pension and it's structured a certain way and bolstered by stocks, you are in the market. And I am not a Republican, but here's their old boogie word, tax and spend, tax and spend, tax and spend. You think you're going to be only hurting or hitting Warren Buffett? No, it's going to be hitting you too. That's one reason why I did not support Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, because a lot of us, to help bolster our nest egg when we retire, some companies give you employee stock purchasing. Some people, you know, a 401k, okay? There's got to be a better way to do this than saying, well, all of our problems will be solved if we just tax. But
Daryl, would you consider yourself rich?
No.
So why would you be threatened by higher taxes on the rich?
Because, you know, taxes don't work that way. If you're going to tax Warren Buffett, you're going to say, well, it's not fair. These other people are in the market too, and they should be taxed. By the way, yeah, I touched some of my stock that I had and wound up having to pay four bills in taxes this year. I don't think that should be fair, if that makes any sense. Four bills, but I really needed the money, the home repairs and stuff, and that's supposed to be money that I used and put it a certain way, made the decisions where to invest, not to invest, to help me do what I wanted to do. It was just a thought. I wanted to throw that out there. You're not going to only be hurting Warren Buffett. You're going to be hurting millions of other Americans who are not as well off as he is. That's all I wanted to say.
Yeah, well, nobody likes to pay taxes, but I think that if you are a billionaire and your primarily of income is trading stocks or capital gains, and you're paying the capital gains rate. I don't know what you're paying, but last I looked at my taxes, I'm paying 25% or 27% in taxes.
And we're almost in the same rate.
I wonder why, you know, if Warren Buffett has said this. I mean, he doesn't think it's a good thing. He says that he pays taxes at a lower rate than his secretary. And if the secretary is paying 25 or 27% and Warren's only paying 20 or whatever he's paying,
that's the game.
That's the thing. I mean, exactly I don't think anybody begrudges you that, you know, that maybe four bills, as you said, is tough on you, and I believe you, but, you know, four bills is nothing to Warren. He could stand to have his tax rate increased by 7%. He wouldn't even feel it.
True. But as I hang up, I'm saying, you know, the game ain't played like that.
Well, let's see. Daryl, let's see if other people agree with you. I'm not so sure you're on top. You have the finger on the public position. But let's find out. Let's take some phone calls from listeners. What do you think is a fair tax rate for Americans? And how do you get those corporations, as Adam Hattersley was saying, some corporations don't pay any taxes. Well, they still use the roads. They still use the airport. They still use all the transportation systems. They use the university system. They use the healthcare system. They use the courts. They use the judges. They use, you know, all aspects of government. Some corporations think the military is there to protect them. So if they're not paying taxes and they have the same rights as people under Citizens United, why shouldn't they pay taxes? 813-239-9663 is our phone number, and you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. And let's go to Steve in Tampa. Steve, what would you like to say?
Yeah, good morning, Rob. I just wanted to comment on the guest you just had on there. It sounded like a bunch of neoliberal crap like we hear from Joe Biden, or we heard from Hillary, or and that's basically my critique. I listened to it, and I heard him basically hurrahing the military and, saying how we needed to stand up, against China, and all the talking points that you hear on the neoliberal side.
And Steve, who's your member of Congress, can I ask?
I believe it would be Roussan.
Roussan? No, Roussan's not in Congress.
No, I'm mistaking. I'm not sure.
Okay. All right, Steve. Thanks a lot. I think it's basic that you know you're a member of Congress, don't you?
Since I vote Green Party most all the time, it's, not that important.
It's not? You don't think that you should call your member of Congress and say, this is what I think about issue X?
I let them know what I think, by voting Green Party.
Do you think that works?
I think it's the only thing that does work.
Okay. Let's see if other people agree. Steve, thanks a lot.
All right.
You think that not knowing your member of Congress and voting for a third party sends a message to your member of Congress. What do you think? 813-239-9663. Let's go to Doug in Clearwater. Hi, Doug. You're on MNF. What's up?
Hey, Rob. This is probably going to be a little bit out there, but you remember the game Monopoly, right?
Right.
It was fun. The goal of the game was for one person to win everything.
Yeah, the goal of the game was to wipe out all the other players, right? It wasn't a pro-capitalist game. It was an anti-capitalist game. I think people grow up thinking it's pro-capitalist, but it's really an anti-capitalist game because it shows how dire the situation is once you get involved in trading real estate.
Yes. My only comment is I think that is the problem that we need to face, whether it's in business or whether it's in politics or... I guess those are the two major factions to consider, but you don't want one person or one entity to control the whole thing. You want everybody to participate. I think if you had that, I think a lot of the issues that we talk about day in and day out would go away.
If everybody had a little bit of economic power.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that would create a fairer society. Doug, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
All right. Good to hear from you. 813-239-9663. That's the number to call if you want to disagree with me, if you want to disagree with one of the callers, or if you want to agree with one of the callers or agree with me. Let's go to Dan in Tampa. Dan, thanks for calling. What's up?
Hey, to Daryl's point, 1% of the population owns roughly 40% of all the stock, okay? And then the next 9%, if you add those folks in, they own up to almost 90% of all stock. So, Daryl, that leaves that 11 to 12% for you, me, the teachers, pensions, and all that. That's what that leaves, Daryl. But having said that, yeah, they should tax them. I often hear people, Rob, talking about, oh, it was so great in the 50s. Does anybody ever take a look at the tax rate, Rob, from the 50s?
Well, lots of people on this radio station have, including Richard Wolf and some of the speakers on alternative radio and Democracy
that.
Now. Yeah,
there's one other thing. That I mean,
what you're saying, Dan, is that, tax rates on rich people were higher in the 1950s.
How do they think we built our interstates and schools and fire departments and everything? That's because back in the 50s, if my father made, I'm an old man now, but if my father had made $5,000 a year, for instance, that was considered a really decent wage in 1955, okay? Back then, a person can make up to $400,000 before they hit what they might have called the luxury tax rate, which was exorbitant. It was like 90 to 93%. Every dollar you made, you paid that much in tax afterwards. But having, like I said to my friends, having said that, I tell them, think about your family, $5,000, you were living a darn good life. These people had $400,000, and compare that to how much cost things were then. They were living a large then. So how does it hurt them is what I want to know. I always often point that out. But another factor that people often forget, Rob, is that we had a major war in the 40s there, and the whole world, Rob, was wiped out except for North America and South America, basically. So it took those folks 20 years to get online again, at least. So if you add the numbers up, it comes up to the 70s sometimes, and that's when their countries started rolling. Japan, Germany, Italy, all these countries started getting their manufacturing going and competing with us. We had no competition, roughly, for 20 years, Rob.
Well, that's true. That's true, but I don't think anybody's advocating war, are they?
No, as a way I don't to, mean war, Rob. I don't
to clear
mean,
out
I mean,
the,
no,
competition.
No, Rob, that was not my point. My point was 20 years, no competition. So if you have no competition, you're going to dominate. Your economy's going to flourish like crap, where the rest of the world's just trying to build and get their stuff going again. It took Germany till 1982, I believe, to finally finish up their last roads and stuff in the war.
Yeah. All right, Dan, thank you, Dan. Thank you. Thank you for your call. And this is WMNF in Tampa. Mark in Brandon says, thanks for having these candidates on your show. It's a great way for us to learn about them in a personal way. David writes this, what does your guest think about the big toll road project in Florida that's being studied now? David, I didn't get a chance to ask him that. He is in the legislature. I'm sure he's got thoughts about it. James writes this. Here is a basic point that nobody seems to get. Health insurance is not health care, writes James. James, thank you for that. Lynn writes this regarding the candidate interview. Lynn says, this guy has no creative ideas. Meet the new politician, same as the old politician. He says he's an engineer by training. Then invent something, writes Lynn. And then another person says, high-speed rail between Tampa and Orlando. We can thank our illustrious former governor, Rick Scott, for nixing that idea because he hated President Obama. And Kevin writes this, the capital gains tax rate needs to be 25%, not 15. Kevin, I hope I read that right, but that's what it looks like to me. And Jeff writes this, you guys broadcast the NPR News at the start of every hour, and they always mention what the stock market is doing. I think it's something of interest to all Americans, writes Jeff. All right, so let's go back to the phones, and thanks for listening to WMNF. Let's go to the person who's been holding the longest, it looks like Neil in St. Petersburg. Hey, Neil, you're on MNF. What's up?
Hi, Rob. Well, I think the last call, I really hit it on the head. I mean, for me, I go back to Reagan. Reagan brought in the greed and the tax and spend and all that. If we just repealed every tax break and law and loophole that's been written since January 1st, 1980, I went back to all those tax rates, we would have money for everything that we need. Back then, taxes were not this evil thing to everyone because you saw the good that it did. You saw good schools, roads, infrastructure. airports, all that was done in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. And Reagan, I mean, Reagan really was the great destroyer of America. And that philosophy, unfortunately, has really caught hold with probably half or maybe more of Americans. And it's just, it's sad because I witnessed it as a teenager when Reagan came in. And I saw the good, and I've witnessed the evolution of the bad. And you can't deny that if you don't tax, you don't have money to spend on what you need.
Yeah, I think we're still living under the Reagan shadow. All right, Neil, thank you. Thank you for
that. Good day.
And let's go to Beverly in St. Pete. Hi, Beverly. You're on M&F. What's up?
Good morning, almost afternoon. My congressman is Charlie Crist.
That's right, in St. Pete. It's good to know your congressperson, yes.
It is, and the only reason why I called is I'm listening, and I'm mortified by some of the way people think. There was a time where with much came much responsibility, and now we have George Bush saying, you know, my constituents, my base is the have and the have-mores.
Yeah, when he joked about it, yeah.
Yeah, on the golf course. And Rockefeller, he said, with much comes much responsibility. And I don't understand what happened. Other than, obviously, the guy we have in office now, it's very clear. That we need people who want to govern. If you don't like government, stay out of governing.
Yeah, you know, I think there are some responsible millionaires and billionaires. There's that group, and we've had them on many times, patriotic millionaires. They're responsible. They know that they're getting a good deal and have been getting a good deal since the Reagan years. Warren Buffett, I think, has somewhat of a social conscience. So not every... Not every billionaire is a libertarian who's trying to grab as much as he can before he dies.
Obviously, yes. But when I hear from folks who are in a 401k and they don't understand the basic concept of an income tax versus a corporate tax rate, where have we gone wrong? Where have we gone where we are allowing ourselves to be so confused?
Yeah, well, that's really a great point. Is that if you're making $20,000 or $30,000 a year, you shouldn't identify with the billionaires because the interests are completely different. All right, Beverly, thanks a lot. That's a great point. I'm glad you made it. Let's see who has been holding the longest here. It looks like John in Port Richey. John, thanks for calling. What would you like to say?
Hey, thanks for the show, Rob. On the taxes, I thought of an idea that you could go, okay, corporates can pay a flat 10% tax rate, but that would be on their gross revenues before any write-offs. Are you there?
Yep, I'm listening.
Okay. Or you could do a little bit where you can give them like four basic areas of write-offs, where they could write off the salaries that they pay for their employees, hourly wages, what they pay for the health care for the hourly wages, capital investment into the company to grow the company, and any 501c3 write-offs. That would be the four basic things they could write off. Everything else they pay taxes on. The other thing I'd like to see is if someone could do a study to say, like, pick a number that... say $35,000 for a single person, that would be totally tax exempt. That first $35,000, $70,000 if you're married, you could add kids in there, and see how much money that would cost in revenue to the federal government. But then on the back end, you just raise the taxes from $35,000. You could graduate them up and make them really steep on the higher end. So I'd like to see a study to see how that would work out. All right.
John, thanks a lot. There are groups out there that look at these issues, the Economic Policy Institute and Citizens for Tax Fairness and others. And there are some people that spend their whole week looking at tax fairness. If you want to comment about today's show, please call us up at the comment line number, 813-238-8001. Record your comment on extension 115, and I'll play your comments back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. Stay tuned for your hero, Mark Bureau. He's back, and he's more troubled than ever. And he'll be along in the next hour. Thanks to Barbara Fling, our phone producer today. I'm Rob Lori. Thanks for listening. This is 88.5 FM, WMNF, Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota, and Lakeland. Here's the latest news from NPR.